This is Rekha-Mix After Hours.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Rack Addicts After Hours podcast. This is episode 16, and alas, the present world has forced us to move from our favourite pub. We've actually got a pretty cool remote solution called Zencaster that Pete's found for us. This is the testing this one out. Andy appears to be AWOL, but we've got Pete and we've got Telmo, our usual matey boys, and we're going to have a bit of a chat about what we've been doing in this slightly strange world. Telmo, you've been hiding away. What have you been up to?
I have, yeah. Hello, and it's been these last couple of weeks I've been sitting at home. I've been in quarantine. I had some symptoms last week, which drawn me to, the fever, the cough, that sort of stuff that everyone has. Got in touch with the NHS, and they've advised me to stay 7 days at home. And a couple of days later, I was advised to stay 14 days. So I'm on my 12th day. Going a bit mad, but trying to get busy.
Imagine your other half has had to stay home with you as well.
Yeah, she is. She's just behind me. It's good that you to be fair, to have some company. One of the things that really, I think it's really important and really got me into staying and not absolutely going mental is the fact that I've been busy. I've been trying to keep myself busy. I've been trying to do the old university assignments, writing music, doing stuff that I would normally do, just out there and, you know, getting in touch with people, just trying to keep myself busy, really. How about you guys? How about you, Ben? What have you been up to these days?
I've been free to move about the world. I mean, not that I really do anyway. Yeah. I've just been going to work. The video editing job, that's now moved to home. Yeah. So for the first time, I'll get to work from home Tuesday and Wednesday. That's going to be interesting. We'll see how that goes. Other than that, the retail kind of thing, we've sort of semi-closed up the customer facing part, so I've just been doing emails and all that kind of thing, kind of planning I guess what I might do if I do have to end up staying home.
Yeah.
Given I never have any motivation to do anything anyway, so I've got to try and find some methods to not sit on YouTube for months at a time.
Yeah.
Stack up some projects. I do have one kit from Thonk on the way, which I think should actually turn up, but I mean, knowing my propensity to get a new DIY kit and smash through it in about 2 seconds, that won't won't keep me going for that long.
Yeah,
I know Pete's got his big old queue of synth DIY, I've got nothing. Actually, I'm making some attenuators in little boxes, but they're really not very interesting.
That's really interesting, actually.
But at the moment, just kicking on as usual. I'm not actually changing my habits that much because I was never really out and about anyway. It's just not going to the pub after work. I think that's about all that's changed.
That one day a week.
I've been keeping myself to myself. Telmo, I had a sort of selection of symptoms, very mild, whatever it was. Who's to say what it is, because there is no testing at the moment for people with who are displaying symptoms, unless you're actually going to hospital. So who knows? It could have been stress, could have been something else, could have been a very mild. I mean, one wishes for yourself, or you wish if you're having mild symptoms and you think, well, if this is it, I hope it's it, because if that means
you
I've
got
had
off
it,
easy but, if it was.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. My gut feeling is possibly it wasn't, but who can tell?
Yeah.
So, generally the same as Telmo, basically not going out, keeping away from everybody. My daughter was experiencing the same symptoms, so we were both doing the same thing. And I'm trying to focus on all the various bits and pieces. I have found myself possibly overwatching some of the information and news because it is relentless. It's on every channel. You can't get away from it.
Yeah.
So I've kind of decided a policy of trying not to watch it at all. I think I have enough information to hand at the moment. And I'm thinking that any continued watching of all the grief that's going on is just going to raise my levels of anxiety to a point where I can't sort of function properly, which is not going to be very productive.
And, that's just how I deal with normal news day to day, even without this. I just ignore it and yeah. just try not to stress out anyway.
It is an issue. Sorry to interrupt you, Pete.
No, that's right.
The fact that people, I've been listening to a lot of the news as well. I feel there's a psychological factor to the whole I have symptoms, don't I have symptoms thing as well. I found myself on the first week, when I started to get better, there was a couple of days that I've overwatched. And I think those 2 days, it might have been just psychological symptoms. I don't know. It could have been the real thing. But again, who's us to say? We don't know. We haven't been tested. Really going against what the World Health Organization have been talking about. But moving on.
Yes, test. Test.
Yeah.
I think it'll be useful if they can, or the various groups that are trying to develop this test to see if you've had it in the past. So they're looking at a sort of an immune reaction type of testing, where it would be a small blood test that would actually allow you to find out if you've had the virus in the past at some point. Because you can only really be tested for it if you're currently suffering from it.
Yeah, if it works, I imagine you could end up doing... not like self-tests, but they could send you one of those little kits, you know, the thing that you stab yourself in the finger, send some blood away.
Yeah, that's what they're doing in Spain. Yeah. I was talking to one of my mates and he was saying that pharmacies are now selling these little kits that you can go and buy just to test yourself, just to make sure and to be safe with the people that you hang out with and your family, of course. Because the situation there is much worse. I mean, it's only next to Italy, I think, right now.
Yeah, Spain's very bad at the moment.
So that's what's keeping people going. Yeah, I've got family there as well. So.
Yeah, what I was hearing for the test, they're talking about something where you can do it yourself, and in theory it would take 20 minutes, and it's akin to something like a pregnancy test, except you wouldn't be using urine, you'd be using blood.
And so you're not pregnant. So.
Yes, I mean, you'd prick your finger as you would if you were sort of taking a blood sugar test, as diabetics do when they test, and you would it would do the same sort of thing. It would... you know, you'd wait after you deposited a drop of blood on some sort of medium, and it would give you a result, a positive or negative, to suggest whether you had the antibodies that would suggest that you've come in contact with the virus.
It works for humans and vampires, so I mean,
I see. But that would be a very useful thing, because people could then, if you were assured that you've had it, that means that you could return to relatively normal life, but you could function in the outside world. So
absolutely.
I don't know. Hopefully you're not going to get a two-speed type of society where you've got the haves which have had it and the have-nots that haven't had it. That would be a bit of a bizarre situation. But
it is a bit bizarre.
There's definitely been some good responses, though, from the industry, and actually just generally over the internet. There's been tons of people live streaming. People have been donating profits of their albums to... kind of charities and people that are working to help people affected by the crisis. I know Bandcamp did. I think is it today or yesterday? A day where 100% of the profits were going to the artists. You know, self-employed people and people who are most affected by jobs closing and shutting down. But it's been almost universal. Lots of organizations are helping out. It's good to see the response, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah, certainly. I saw the Bandcamp announcement. I think it was yesterday or the day before. They sort of. I think I just saw a tweet, or it might be in a Facebook post that was stating that. And I agree. There's lots of people making all sorts of offers of help. I mean, it's the strangeness of this whole experience is that it's everybody's in it. I mean, everybody, the whole world. Literally, the whole world. It's normally in these situations where there's a disaster or something happens, it tends to be, even if it's a massive disaster or a problem, it tends to be relatively localized. But the fact that it's literally happening to everyone everywhere almost simultaneously. That's the bizarre nature of the whole thing.
Everyone is having their bit, really. I'm thinking of the industry as performers, as guitar instrumental teachers. I'm thinking the thing is that producers leads me to think that they were going to be sitting down in front of the computer at home anyway. I'm thinking more of the performing side of the music business. People doing live stream concerts. I'm thinking about, as I said, if you're a teacher, you're going to have to adapt to maybe start guitar lessons online or piano lessons, as some people on Facebook are doing.
Being quite creative about how you project your skills or how you employ your skills to derive some sort of income. Mm. I can imagine it's literally across the board.
Do you guys think this is going to change the industry in a way? Things will never go back to what they were.
I think it will change the world. I don't think the world's going to go back the same.
Yeah.
I don't see how it can. I can't remember. I don't think there's been a time. I can't think of anything where there's been such an immediate and very effective interruption to everything, to everybody's lives in this respect. And all the forecasts suggest that it's potentially going to go on for quite some time. The best guess that we're stating today was between 6 months and a year of restrictions.
Yeah.
Of various degrees. So obviously the main thing is they've been stating in all the countries that you see all the governments talking about is flattening the curve so that they're local health infrastructure doesn't get completely overwhelmed. So yeah. I think that's the main concern, to get the health systems get completely flattened, rather than flattening the actual curve of the infection rate, that the actual the health system just crumples under the weight. That's going to be the worry. But obviously all the major financial moves that the various governments are now proposing, which seems relatively encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see how society, and in particular the music business, going back at it to see how they will react and how people will really overcome this issue. And it will be still in our lifetimes, but we will, it should be a good one. There's also
keep plodding on, won't we?
Yeah, there's also some bad news, non-coronavirus related.
Okay.
Kenny Rogers died. I don't know if you guys
Who's Kenny Rogers?
Oh, country singer-songwriter, an absolute legend.
Sorry, man.
Yeah. I did see, unfortunately, Kenny Rogers, singer of a string of massive hits like The Gambler and Islands in the Stream, has passed away.
He was 81.
Yeah. Really famous in the 80s and the 90s.
I think a lot of these sort of notable deaths that you get throughout the year, every year when famous people pass away, are going to be somewhat buried in everything else that's going on.
Yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah,
I mean, they'll be mentioned, but most people's lips will be, is it related to the virus or is it just natural, some other, you know, other reason, as tragic as whatever the situation is for them personally.
That's why I thought it's weird not to associate bad news with coronavirus. It is a thing that, you know, anyway, it's not really happening.
So, you know, something that we already discussed before in a few podcasts ago was the impact it's going to have on supply, and we've talked about live venues and all that, and that's clearly coming to fruition right now. It's happening. There's literally going to be no real world venues or anywhere that you can experience live music. I can see that a lot of people will turn to, and I've already seen quite a few people doing sort of live streams, and we're going to see a lot of that. And obviously the sentiment is it's, you know, we've all got to be very thankful we actually have the internet that's going to make communications possible, because imagine a situation where we had a scenario as we're experiencing at the moment, but we had no easy method of communicating other than maybe analog phones, as it would have been a few years ago, or quite a few years ago, a couple of decades ago. So at least we can all be present without being present, which is quite good. But I wanted to go on and say, I mean, I was initially thinking about supply of things like hardware and how that would potentially be affected. But now I'm sort of, now that I've got more of an understanding of the scope and how massive the impact is going to be, I think there's going to be problems from the other angle. I can see that potentially a lot of the pieces of equipment that we know and love and quite often spend our time retailing to the general public, it's not so much that they're going to become potentially short supply, it's the fact that the public aren't really going to be that interested in buying it on the whole, because having the latest synth or possibly a new guitar or something else isn't going to be people's main priority anymore.
Well, at some point it will be. I mean, but at the moment, all I've been doing at work is saying, oh, wait, look, this piano is out of stock. You can have this one instead, because everybody suddenly has a massive desire to learn a new instrument because they're stuck at home and twiddling their thumbs. I think that will continue to, for a certain amount of time, it will just depend on, you know, self-employed people, how they're dealing with, I guess, unemployment.
This is the problem. I mean, if the countries, even with the offers of help that are now starting to come from the government, the hit to people personally is going to be horrendous.
Hmm.
And the longer it goes on, the more horrendous it's going to be. I can't imagine this isn't going to stifle demand for the type of products that we deal with aren't exactly essentials.
Yeah,
they're aspirational. And I know initially people are sort of thinking, or, you know, I can imagine people thinking, well, this is a good time for me to, you know, I played the piano while I was younger. I've left it, but it's a really good time for me to take it up again. But that's only going to go so far.
Yeah,
there's a lot of other equipment. Think about all the equipment we sell for live situations, PAs.
And, yeah, no one's going to need that for a while.
Yeah, wireless systems. And there's a myriad of stuff that, you know, there's going to be no requirement for it whatsoever.
Yeah, so I'm a bit guilty on that because I bought a Yuki bass, a ukulele bass. So, you know, there's suddenly that need of, oh, I'm going to be at home. I need to do something, you know, that's good for me. And, you know, I can't really waste any more time watching any more TV and stuff like that. I think that is a good way of seeing it. However, people are not, from what you are saying, Ben, it looks like people are not really bothered if they're not gonna get their, you know, Roland, you know, FP10 or Casio, whatever keyboard. They just take it, right?
At the moment, yeah. I mean, as Pete's suggesting, at some point it's gonna all dry up. But for the moment, people are clamoring to get their hands on stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's that get under the radar, get it quick, get it. They've got, you know, something that they were thinking about getting. Maybe it's a time to get it right away, rather than so that the situation kind of crystallizes around them and they sort of drop the procrastination about the purchase and move swiftly ahead onto getting it into the basket. Then you, the other side of it is the logistics. So, I mean, currently, most of the retailers that I've been looking at are sort of suggesting that they're still trading, certainly online. They're still, you know, the logistics looks reasonably good, although I see the time scales have really changed quite dramatically. I mean,
yeah,
are we still offering next day, or is that gone out
the window? We are still at the moment. The supply is already affected. But at the moment, I mean, it's just down to the shipping companies and their staffing situation.
Well, I've seen some pledges from the Parcel Force and a few others that sort of say that they're, you know, doing all the appropriate advice and they have a new technique. Someone was saying that, it wasn't yourself, or was someone saying the DPD do this thing where they don't even let you, don't even have to sign for it. They sort of just drop it on your, you know, sort of give them.
I don't know if it was anybody that we were speaking to, but one of our other colleagues at work had to have his picture taken with a new TV because he's not allowed to sign the thing. This was 6:30 in the morning. He's probably out there in his boxers. He has to hold this TV and the delivery dude has to take a picture.
Brilliant.
Well, that's good. I mean, that gives you the confidence, because the last thing I really want to do is some sort of gentleman sort of sniffing and coughing on my doorstep, holding a parcel out to me. I've noticed that they sort of kind of offer them up to you from quite a distance. I had a delivery last week, and the gentleman sort of, in fact, I had two, and the gentleman offered it up to me, and he was standing a good few feet away and kind of leaned in, but you know, you could see that he was making a great effort to be sort of as far away from possible. Yeah, but I like the idea of them just sort of, you know, coming to sort of putting it on your drive and you give them the nod, assuming it's not bucketing down with rain or whatever. Or you know, it's the only way they're going to continue functioning, because they can't really have their staff going around and potentially catching something nasty off the doorstep or whatever. And but at the same time, they're almost a vital service. In fact, I think they've mentioned, you know, they're talking about the school closures whereby the only people that are allowed to send their children to school are ones considered to be vital workers, and obviously they, you know, police, hospital workers, doctors, medics, nurses.
Maybe, count the postal service in there.
And so forth. But yes, they've mentioned couriers as well.
Oh, yeah,
as being
absolutely.
A vital service.
They are vital. People are not getting their supplies at home because they can't leave. So they are of massive importance right now. If you're ordering stuff off from Amazon or eBay or whatever, or even you're shopping, you know, I'm not quite sure how it's working for, you know, for like Tesco or Sainsbury's deliveries, because you don't see a lot of those ones. I don't think they have enough drivers, to be fair, and they're busy.
They've been giving prioritized delivery slots to at-risk people, so the elderly, I think, at the moment.
Which is fair enough. And people are relying a lot in other services like Amazon Fresh. Well, I was for the first week. I had like to pay maybe like £10 to secure a slot. There was like 4 days after at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I did it anyway. And now there's just no way that you can get any slots whatsoever for the next maybe 2 to 3 weeks. So
they're going to have to really ramp up. I mean, I think there's a massive recruitment drive out at the moment. The supermarkets are desperate to recruit shelf stackers, and I mean, they claim that there's no problems with the supplies of food. There are problems in the logistics of getting it onto the shelf. I think they were saying there's something like they were looking for about 13 or 16,000 people generally across that sector. So that's going to be quite a bit of emphasis. But I have heard one of my friends tried to order something. I think it was computer related, and he's got an Amazon Prime membership, and I believe, and under certain circumstances, you can get a 2-hour delivery, and that 2-hour delivery is now 7 days.
Oh yeah, that's the one. Yeah, I've got Prime.
So that's got that's, you know, the supply chain or the actual logistics side of things are really being sort of hampered at the moment. So again, it's watch this space. So there's so many facets to this that are going to sort of create problems. That's the problem. Well, that's the, you know, the issue at hand.
Yeah. Just to ramp up, I think logistics will not have massive disruption. I think it will be just, you know, the services that we know so far, you know, that will close stores and stuff like that. So
I mean, as I say, I rightly or wrongly, I can't imagine it's much longer before there's a general order for non-essential retail outlets to close. A lot of particular brands or large chains are selectively or on their own making that decision. I know that IKEA closed all their shops last week, I believe.
Oh, really? I didn't hear about that.
Primark are going to close them from tomorrow onwards, several hundred and something stores around the UK. So I can see more and more that the retailers will make their own decisions. And I think this is the direction of travel that the government have tried to pursue in the UK, which is that they first suggest, and then if not enough people are taking the hint, they make it an edict. Mm-hmm. But prior to that, and that's what they've done in all cases. As I say, I personally wish they'd moved a bit quicker on all this, but you know, I have to think that they're taking all sorts of other things into consideration.
Yeah,
I mean, the most important thing, that absolutely the most important thing, is when all these are closed, am I going to have to slum it with Sainsbury's pre-ground coffee? That is my main concern right now.
I mean, can you not indulge in a stocking up? I mean, I hate to mention the word panic and buy in the same sentence, but
going to have to buy
surely something that
Beringer
something
coffee.
That's yeah, oh, Beringer boy. Coffee, but something that is. you know, it's for the connoisseur's palate, so to speak, you know, the real coffee lovers.
I mean, yeah.
Or is it such an expensive commodity that it tends to be not practical to, or does it not keep? I'm not that au fait.
Yeah, once it's ground, it keeps for a lot less time.
Yeah,
and that's why if you have your own grinder and you have beans, you can get it to go longer. I think you can get beans from most, like decent-ish beans from most supermarkets. But my, although given that I do sort of personally know the people that make my favourite coffee, I hope I can get a bit of business their way if it all kind of goes.
Do you buy the mill in bulk? Do you buy like massive packs?
No, I actually have a spaghetti jar. Mm. You know those tall jars, and I fill that up with beans.
Spaghetti coffee. Spaghetti
do you have coffee. A? Do you have your own grinder?
Yes, absolutely.
So you're all tooled up, ready to
I'm
go.
I'm all set, but I'm hoping it doesn't get more and more difficult to get my hands on the favourite beans.
Mm. My girlfriend bought one today, a grinder.
Good idea.
Yeah,
good idea.
Yeah.
Obviously they're imported. That's the other rub about the beans because the supply is finite as well. Uh-oh. So you could be tooled up as much as you like, but if they're not coming into the UK,
it's true. More spanners in the works.
So I'd suggest to. And how long when it's in bean form before you grind it? What's the sort of average life before it's?
Very good question.
I just love how we went from state of emergency to coffee beans.
But coffee is my number one priority at all times. I don't actually know. You can freeze them, which does give you a little bit of leeway on the freshness, but you don't want to do it if you don't have to. Mm. Maybe I'd leave them a month and I'd be happy.
Okay.
So you could do it
in a sealed container anyway.
And your favorite coffee emporium, I assume that they are only allowing takeouts. Or
at the moment, yeah. So it's actually I worked there for a total of one shift before it all got serious and they had to shut down, basically. So now they're doing takeaway coffee and actually selling some groceries as well, which is quite cool. So
that's cool.
And some fresh veggies and things. So they're pretty much shut down. But the couple that run it, they actually roast in their back garden. So it's Surrey Hills Coffee. You can't get it online. You have to come to Guildford for it. But yeah, they're still kicking, just about.
Well, they've got to do everything in their power to maintain the business.
Absolutely. I mean,
obviously, there's all these promises of help from the government. But I had a look for my company at some of the actual aspects, and you really had to jump through some hoops.
Oh, okay. To get all the extra kind of funding and support.
Yeah, you had to be certain. So it all sounded like a lot of these things. It's the devil's in the detail. So
did you contact HMRC or did you just?
It's all on that. You can go to a website. I mean, they don't seem to want to receive phone calls anyway under any circumstance. Even when you're ill now, you're not supposed to phone them, are you? You're supposed to just go to the website.
Hmm.
The isolation thing's reaching new heights. I just got a picture through in the family WhatsApp group. It's just a picture of my sister on a stepladder, and she's stacked up like a bunch of boxes of flour and some Jacob's crackers and some tins.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
What on earth is going? They're going mad there.
Things are going down.
Actually, they're going up. It's a very tall tower.
So they're going to be doing a lot of baking then?
Well, yeah, as my other half calls it, procrastibaking.
That's a quite good term for it.
It's pretty good.
So while you contemplate your mortality, you can bake.
Exactly. Well, it's one of those things that weirdly disappeared from the shelves. Is flour just went really early? But like, how many cakes are these people making?
Oh, they're making loads.
Why?
Well, my daughter does a lot of baking when she gets stressed. So I think there's a lot of stressed bakers out there, sort of.
Yeah.
But I personally only have ice cream and peanut butter. So yeah. Ice cream and peanut butter.
It's a healthy, varied diet. You'll be all right.
That's all I've been having.
I have to know that as I watched the shelves empty, and as they emptied over about 3 weeks now, because it started a few weeks back, there didn't seem to be much attempt by certainly the larger supermarkets, to actually restock. So whether they're holding things back or they've got massive logistics problems, I'm not really sure. But
they have logistics problems. It's getting the toilet paper down. So many people are buying it. Yeah, I mean, I'm giving the example of toilet paper, but the supermarket's representative. I don't know his name. I don't know what it's called. But I've watched it on TV the other day, He was just saying how hard it is to get the supplies from the warehouse. People are panicking for no reason. That there is enough supplies, and there is, we have enough toilet paper and eggs and milk. People are just buying because they're afraid, they're panicking, and which is fair enough. I mean, I get it. I guess this sort of stuff brings the best, but also the worst in humanity sometimes.
So, but, you can see in some respects, you can see the point. If you're being told that you might have to be locked in your house for an extended period of time, the logic is, I better get a load of food in.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems it's perfectly logical. And it's all very well for the government and everyone else to say it's not a problem. But if you don't see the shelves, or if all you see is the shelves emptying and you're not seeing them being restocked, all the platitudes and promises from whoever aren't going to cut it, to be honest.
No, it only takes a couple of people to start buying in bulk, and then other people will start buying. So it's a snowball effect.
Yeah, certainly.
If we were assured from the beginning that there wasn't going to be any shortages and we would be fine, please keep buying as usual, as you normally do, maybe we wouldn't have this issue and we wouldn't be talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah, but having said that, they should have been ready. They were supposed to be all ready because the fear was that there would, at some point over the last couple of years and going forward, that there would be a hard Brexit. And then that was one of the plans that was supposed to be in place. All the grocers of the UK were all supposed to be primed and ready to go. And this is this event that's happened to everyone has shot holes through that completely.
Can I talk about what I've been doing? This last
yes,
couple of
yes, please do.
Weeks.
Let's get away from all this.
Get away from all this.
Obviously, as you guys know, I've mentioned a few podcasts ago. I was working my band's EP on PGIP's EP. We were going to record bass and drums, and obviously, because of all this situation, things just got delayed because you can't really get together with people anymore. So I had to come up with solutions, and obviously, deadlines are still a thing. I still want to be able to commit to making this within reasonable time. So I've decided to do it all myself. I've been going on this madness hunt with Ableton, the DAW that I use. We're trying to find the right drum loops, the right drum tracks for what I need. So I've been doing loads of that. Apparently, Ableton just released this new thing that's connected with Max. It's called FlexiDrum or FlexDrum. That automatically recognizes time signatures and does fills for you. It's kind of like Logic Drummer, but a bit more customizable, I suppose, in a modular way. Is that a thing? In a Max kind of programming way. So I've been doing some research on that. And I've been recording bass because I bought the U-Bass. So it's really interesting, actually, how a ukulele with rubber strings sounds like a double bass.
That, I was just actually going to ask you if that's how you thought it sounded, because I think one came in second hand in the shop once, no. And I thought it sounded like a double bass, and everyone was going, it doesn't. I mean, it's got frets, so you're not going to have the kind of the fretless thing, but in that tubby kind of sort of really low kind of thing, they do have a bit of upright about them. They're cool.
They do. Obviously, you need to plug them in to get the full effect, and it needs a bit of EQ as well. It's totally achievable, really, that sort of sound. It's got an identity to itself as well, but I love it. I've been using it in all the tracks.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Okay, so I wanted to ask Ben, what's the situation with the modular CAF? Obviously, this is in respect of physical presence and meetings. That's going to be a bit of a interruption. But is there any intention to continue it online or try and keep
There's not. We don't have a plan yet. We had to obviously stop, because common sense, and also obviously the venue is closed until it's all blown over. We're investigating platforms. I think there's a charity, I think, called Forward for Wiz, who were doing some audience-less shows for live streams. So they're interested in having some ModCaf people around. We're looking for some kind of some kind of platform for it. We probably wouldn't do the jam because, I mean, while there are methods to collaborate musically online, just latency is a thing. It can be a little bit complicated. But in just live streaming performances with good audio could definitely work. Obviously, we'll have to get people involved that do have the equipment for it, a decent audio interface and some form of camera. We'll need to look into that, but it's on the cards. It probably won't be ready in time for when the next meeting was due anyway, but we'll have a look. Hopefully we'll get to be able to do something. We've got no shortage of people twiddling their thumbs at home with great musical brains that would definitely want to contribute. So as soon as we've got the platform sorted, there'll be something.
Yeah, that'd be good because it really is important that everybody tries to maintain any momentum on any projects they're working on. And it'd be so easy to just drop the ball at this time and just indulge in some navel gazing and obviously some serious YouTube watching. And you know, one's got to try and drag yourself away from that situation and sort of maintain or even get more productive than normal, as we talked about last week. So I'd be quite happy to get involved with that. And it's almost more introspective. You can sort of be lurking in your little sound cave or your setup, but you can be sort of with everyone else at the same time.
Yeah, there's a couple of DAWs that do that. I think FL Studio is one of them. Fruit Loops. I think you've got a collaborate mode that you can, but obviously all the people need to have that DAW and be working simultaneously online.
Yeah, I'd rather not have to entertain the Fruity Loops possibility.
There we go. Maybe Ableton as well. Ableton Link, I think that's what it does. Just got to do some research, man. But hard times require hard measures.
Maybe you could just have sort of organized sort of individual people doing live streams on your Facebook page or something like that. People take.
Yeah, it shouldn't be a problem. Even just entry level kind of tools like Facebook live streaming. We'll get it done. We just got to get
just
organized
work out
and stop freaking out.
Yeah, that's no, it sounds quite exciting and interesting, something to get involved with.
Yeah, definitely. It should be fun. I know Colin Benders, who's a big old modular man, has done a couple of live streams, which is something he used to do more often. He'd just live stream just with his modular. He'd be making a track and it'd be like a really long live stream. Some of them were over 20 hours long.
Good grief. I have seen some of his stuff. I haven't watched them throughout, but I've seen some of the stuff he was doing a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I've never seen like one of the live streams or looked at the archives, but then he uploads the finished track, like the finished performance later. He's been doing a lot of that again. And I think he's done some charity ones too, which is pretty cool.
Interesting to get involved. The other thing that I've been advocating is only those who have them or can afford them or want to get them is... the old VR. It's the perfect time for doing the social thing with VR.
How is that? Have you tried it? Have you done it?
I've been into VR for quite a few years and I've had I've had at least three. I've currently got two headsets. My son's got another one as well. So we've got a plethora of equipment. And certainly, I mean, there's all sorts of devices for all sorts of wallets, so to speak.
Okay.
One of the ones I've got at the moment, which is very good, which is the successor to, so it's the Oculus Quest. Is it Quest? Sorry, Quest.
Quest.
Say it properly.
Yeah.
So the Oculus Quest is a completely free standalone system. So you don't need a hulking great computer. It's all the processing is done in the actual headset, and you've got 5 degrees of movement, and it's a very impressive piece of kit. And they start at something like $399.
Is it the 64 gigabytes?
Yeah, the 64 gigabyte ones. And it's there's already quite a few social things. So you can actually meet up with people. And it has there's something when you're in VR called presence. Whereas even if it's a cartoon environment, because of the way it works, your mind believes you're in that cartoon environment.
You see, I had this idea that VR would be mostly for gamers. But I've never really associated with, you know, FaceTiming kind of someone or Skyping someone.
There's definitely that side of things. Obviously, gaming is one of the aspects that drives it along, but there's quite a few other social things. There's quite a few programs that have been in existence for some time, and there's some few things in the pipeline that should be coming out very shortly. For instance, Facebook, and obviously they own Oculus anyway, have got a thing called Horizons coming out very shortly. It's in beta at the moment, I believe, and that is a complete world-building social platform. So I don't know if you've seen, not quite to the extent of, have you seen the film Ready Player One or even read the book?
Oh, no, I haven't.
I've seen it. Okay. It's a good watch, actually.
Really?
Yeah, so Ready Player One, I think it's early 80s book, someone who was doing a bit of future scanning and sort of came up with and it was a very popular book at the time, very aspirational. I think a lot of people that are into VR kind of quote it as their inspiration. And then recently, I would want to say about 18 months ago, it was made into a film directed by Steven Spielberg.
Oh, And, isn't that 2018 version of that?
That would be it. So about 2 years ago. So
Right. Yeah,
it just sort of has a usual sort of story that humanity is living in a dystopian world, but they all go into this sort of VR experience and sort of live out various sort of fantasies in there. And you can see that at sort of a time like we're experiencing at the moment would be. Could potentially be quite a driver for something like that.
Absolutely, to explore.
In fact, you can see all the things that are really going to sort of by virtue of the issues that people are having with mobility and human contact, there's going to be all sorts of stuff, including the sort of podcasting as we're doing at the moment. Mm. And a lot more sort of vlogging, although the subject matter is going to be a bit sort of
a little
curtailed
bit potentially.
But if you look at VR, anything's possible. So
you can go to the museum, dude.
Certainly. I mean, so if the world isn't that interesting where you are because you're stuck in your bedroom or you're just stuck in
don't even need to get dressed.
Well, yes, you've got to try. I mean, the watchword, a lot of people have suggested that they should try and keep a routine and sort of get up at a regular time and make the point of getting properly dressed and getting up like you're meant to, because it would be so easy to get into that type of swing of things. And I can see that being very not a good move.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Very well.
So
nice insight in VR, really.
I definitely recommend it to anyone if they've already got one that they only know what it is. If they have the spare funds, and obviously this is a difficult time at the moment, but if you do and you can get a hold of one, I would totally advise it because it would give you possibly another outlet somewhere where you can actually.
Are you recommending us that Oculus Quest?
The Quest in particular, because it's very affordable and it's an all-inclusive, you don't need any extraneous equipment, whereas some of the other Oculus equipment, I've got a Rift, and that needs a very powerful PC, let's say, and a very powerful graphics card to run it. I mean, the frame rate and the resolution is obviously a lot higher than the Quest, but the Quest makes a really good fist of it, considering that it's
basically hardware, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Snapdragon processor, and the headset is not only representing stereo three-dimensional graphics to your eyes, at the same time it's tracking all your movements. That's quite an accomplishment for such a small processor with, effectively not really much memory. To be honest, it just shows you how far phone technology has gone. And it's not even current phone technology. It's sort of, it's like any product. By the time you've got the product out, that technology has moved on quite a bit.
This is really cool, man. I'm going to have to get one of those.
Yeah, I mean, they really are fantastic. I mean, if anyone hasn't tried it, generally, if people come round and they have time, when they come round to my place, I generally inflict it on them.
It's the best of you trying to make people buy stuff, and you always achieve it with me.
Sorry about that.
That's
spending
all right.
Your money for you.
But what's Pete tempted you into so far, then, Telmo?
Oh, microphones, headphones, speakers, my Genelecs. Thank you, Pete.
We all have Genelecs.
Oh, there we go. See?
Yeah, not bad. 80-20s, you've got 80-30s, Telmo. What have you got? Are you 40s or 50s, Pete?
I've got 83 50s.
Oh, the big boys and the bigger boys of the big boys. Yeah, like fanboys all round.
Yes,
get them all together. Fair enough.
But as I say, what's possible within virtual? We could have virtual podcasting where you're actually physically, well, not physically, you're virtually all together. But you know, there is a visual presence. You know, you can. There's literally not quite eye contact. We haven't really got to that stage yet. But you can just gesticulate. You know, you wave your arms around and you can point at things. There is a couple of programs. The name escapes me, but one where you can actually set up a home cinema and invite friends over to watch a film.
Oh, that is super cool.
So they're physically, you can either be in a theatre or a cinema type of environment, or just a kind of relaxed kind of lounge type of environment.
Yeah.
You know, like a penthouse, and you can all watch a movie together.
Well, you could choose your avatar. I could turn up as Gizmo Duck or something.
Well, there is. It depends on what application. Some of them, the avatar possibilities are limited. I mean, you can sort of select things like hairstyles and hair colors and so forth, but they all have a similar kind of aesthetic, so to speak. So you, I mean, there are others that where you can, you know, wildly change your look, and there's a whole selection of kind of personas that you can adopt, which is quite weird. I've been into some sort of very strange sort of worlds where, you know, you're talking to someone and you know, you don't know if it's a man or a woman or something else, even, you know, who knows what you're talking to,
who knows? That's very interesting.
And I suppose
I think it kind of deserves a whole new episode, this whole entertainment.
Yeah, we could look at it with some suggestions and things like that. People want, if people haven't got into it yet and they feel that that's something they want to explore in their sort of extended leisure time that they might be have on their hands and over the next few months.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember following it in the early days with the was Oculus Rift was one of the first ones to come out, wasn't it, Pete?
Well, the whole Oculus thing stemmed from a few years ago when a couple of people got together and. I'm struggling to remember the gentleman's name, but there was a young guy who was actually putting these together using old phone bits.
Oh, yeah.
And he was on a forum talking about it. He also collected them. Palmer Lucky, that's the gentleman's name. So he was, he'd made a couple of these headsets. And then the guy that's behind Doom, John McCormack, he's a very famous programmer behind all that sort of.
Oh, was he the one that was at the Joe Rogan podcast this week?
I'm not sure if it was him. No, I think that was another developer. That was someone else. But he said he was going to one of the trade shows and could the Palmer send him the actual sort of prototype that he'd made? And he got that and he did some coding on it so that they could compensate for the distortions of the lenses. And they demonstrated it and got quite a lot of excitement. And then that sort of inspired them to form a company, which became Oculus. So they did got some initial capital funding and made some prototypes and so forth. And then they went to out there and got more funding and developed it even further. And then Mark Zuckerberg popped up and dropped $2 billion on them.
Jeez.
Typical Zuckerberg.
And because he saw it as the way forward for Facebook. There was a lot of people that weren't happy because it was a bit more of a cultish underground thing, and a lot of people felt by the acquisition by Facebook would be detrimental. But quite frankly, it needs somebody, you know, or that sort of money thrown at it to really get it going.
Yeah.
And at the same time, Valve were working on their own thing, so it was the right time. A few years back, for the technology got to a point, and the goal of producing sort of functional headsets that were reasonably priced, sort of a feasible thing, and now we're I want to say about 5 years down the line now.
Oh yeah, I remember so when they first started coming out. I was watching some people who were making in a very Ready Player One kind of way, you know, 360 treadmills and things just for VR games, because that's always been one of the difficulties that I believe is actually the movement when you've got limited real world space. And you want to walk around. I know one indie game that I followed on YouTube, I think it was called Hover Junkers. This was made for the Vive, where you could, you know, you can always input how large your space is. And that dictated how large your kind of hovering craft was. So you could still move around freely, but visually in the game, you were still limited to a certain amount of space. That kind of worked. A lot of games use the teleportation thing.
Yeah, I mean,
with these treadmills, in theory, you could just get around that entirely.
Yes, I mean, the other problem is the VR nausea, which you get if you travel around using the sort of momentum and you would do with traditional 2D games or 3D games that you're viewing on a 2D screen. You can't move around like that in VR. You get feel quite unwell quite quickly. Different people have different levels of sensitivity to it. I mean, I personally don't really suffer from seasickness, and I've travelled on boats in quite rough seas and so forth. But I have had the VR sickness, and it's not good. So you can have 10 minutes of VR that sort of land you on the sofa with sort of an hour worth of trying to feel sort of human again. So the developers are very conscious about developing different modes of movement. One of the popular ones is the teleport, where you kind of project a beam from your controller to the point where you want to end up, and then you snap to there. Or they do other ones where they restrict the way that you can turn. So you can turn, you don't turn continuously. You snap to different degrees of a circle as you're turning. And there's some other techniques that can minimalize. And they're working on this all the time. The best, obviously, games are where you're moving freely in the real world. But obviously, as you say, people have restrictions on space. And all the original headsets are all tethered because they had to be connected to the very powerful PC that was driving the screens. But again, going back to the Quest, because it's completely wireless, all it needs is a good internet connection. And and in fact, a lot of the games, once you've downloaded them to the headset, you don't even need the internet connection at all. And the only limit is the space. And you, in theory, if you had a really large space and you mark that out using the Sentinel program, which is the thing that marks out the safety area that you can operate in, you could literally be running around in a squash court or a tennis court or something like that, which would make a very interactive situation.
Could you go even bigger, use like a full-on sports hall or something?
Possibly. I'm not sure. I think there is a maximum size that the thing can sort of take into its memory. That there's a process where you identify where the floor is when you're setting out. So you put the handset on the floor and click it, so it knows that's where the floor is. Then you stand up and then you paint. You have a view because the newer systems are using a thing called inside-out tracking, where they're using cameras, very similar to how a lot of automated cars like Teslas work, in the respect that using cameras to sense the outside world. But you actually get a black and white vision of that when you're setting it up. So you can see where you are in the space. And then you point and sort of paint either a circle or a square around yourself, and that is designated as the sort of sentinel, the safety area that you're within. So if you move within the game and you breach that area, kind of a mesh appears to identify the fact that you've gone through this invisible barrier, so that you don't end up sort of walking into a wall or something like that, or tripping over a piece of furniture. So safety is paramount with these things.
There's also another side to VR that seems to me quite interesting, is how we connect with each other. I was just looking at the Telegraph. They have this piece of news that came out last month, and it says, this is in South Korea, it says that a virtual reality is being used to reunite grieving mother with avatar of a dead child, dead child, unfortunately. So it seems to me like this is a way of getting people back, people that you care as well. This is very weird.
No, thanks.
And different, isn't it?
Yeah,
but you can. You see?
Yeah,
you
I mean, it's been used. It's been used in all sorts of therapies at the moment. I think they're looking at. Once the headsets became freely available, there were so many research labs and looking into all sorts of human aspects that are thinking that they can utilize them. And I've seen so many utilizations that were completely outside of what the original sort of what the headsets were designed to do.
Yeah.
So there's some really innovative things that people are doing with them, and they're sort of looking to. Use them in all sorts of scenarios to help people from sort of people suffering from PTSD to people you know, helping people deal with prejudice and so forth. I mean, an extreme range of utilization, let's say.
Yeah, once again, I guess technology to the rescue.
It's a bit arguable that this will help, but we can always leave that for another day, I suppose. But it's technology doing it again, basically.
Maybe we'll have a VR episode of Rack Addicts After Hours then. Anybody else got some bits and pieces to chat about? I think I've pretty much run out, to be honest. Nothing's really happened to me recently.
No, and it's obviously something we're going to experience, but I think that once people get ready for this, this new normality, if you can call it normality, but the new norm that is sort of upon us, then I think people will adjust their sort of their everyday lives to tailor it and hopefully focus more on, you know, what they need to do within their sort of more restricted environment. So, I personally think that, I mean, I'm already starting to start write lists so that, rather than procrastinating, as I say, watch YouTube, I can look at the list and say, right, I've got to do this, this, and this. So I think that's possibly the way forward. And as I said earlier, the routine thing, you know, get up, a regular time, make the point of getting dressed, make the point of maybe doing some exercise, whatever that's feasible. I mean, how early along, you know, even if it's going for a walk or something like that, obviously avoiding other contact, but getting some fresh air where possible. And then sort of ploughing into all those various things that you've been procrastinating, not just recently, but over the last, you know, before all this grief came down on us.
Absolutely, yeah. I've been taking this time as well to listen to a lot of music because obviously you've got this, you know, lovely set of speakers at home and you got to make use of them. I've been listening to a lot of 70s jazz, Weather Report, Jaco Pastorius, Joe Zawinul, and makes really good use of our harp 2600 in some of the albums. So you should totally, totally listen to that if you can, and stay safe. If you got to do some exercise, I would recommend you to do some stuff at home. Of course, I love being outside, but times like these, we learn to live again.
Lovely stuff. Well, if you need more music, do tune into the Rack Addicts After Hours Spotify playlist if you're down there. Telmo, could you actually give me a track, Jaco Pastorius track, perhaps?
Oh, okay. Well, since I've mentioned Weather Report, I'm going to go for Havona. So it's Havona. It's a great track.
It's in there, so tune in if you're on Spotify. I'll have to check, see if it's available publicly. If you just give it a Google, there should be a list there you can probably find on YouTube. So yeah, well, tune in this time, most likely next week. We'll see you there. Stay safe. Wash your hands to Dean Town by Wolfpack. That's always a good tune. Keep them scrubbing. Don't make all those unnecessary trips. Keep away from people, but don't go mad. We'll see you in the next one. Bye now.